Oh, hi. Welcome to Tech Theater, Clubhouse Conversations, where we have conversations around conversations about the conversations we just had on the Clubhouse app.
This is a podcast to continue that conversation, because every Tuesday on Clubhouse, we have these amazing discussions with brilliant people who sit at the intersection of technology and theater.
We always walk away from these Clubhouse talks with so many thoughts. There's only an hour. We can't get to everything. It inspires new thought. And so we decided to make a podcast, share those thoughts, and reach even more of our friends and collaborators. So hey, I am Jess, CEO and co-founder of Broadway Unlocked. My background is in the theater, and I love connecting it to technology and the internet and all that jazz.
And I'm Joe, co-founder of Broadway Unlocked with Jess over here. And I've been building and operating startups for over 10 years, so I try to bring a tech and media perspective to these conversations.
And so with that, welcome to Tech Theater. This week on Clubhouse, we talked about a lot of stuff. We talked about the casting announcement for the upcoming Wicked feature film, specifically an LA Times article detailing why it's so important that Cynthia Erivo, a Black woman, has been cast as Elphaba. So exciting. We also continued our ongoing conversation about the impact and validity of digital theater, something that comes up super frequently in Clubhouse and on this podcast. But this week it was in response to a piece of news, an American Theater article, which claimed that most theaters during the pandemic saw low box office numbers and their audiences didn't see the value in continuing virtual offerings in the future because they didn't enjoy it. We brought that up because I got into a discussion on Twitter with the little contingency of really smart people talking about digital and virtual theater. And I think the consensus was we all call a little bit of BS on this survey. I love you, American Theater, longtime subscriber, but yikes. So, Joe, where are we starting today?
Can I start with my embarrassing reveal about the fact that I have never seen Wicked?
Ooh.
And even worse, like, I didn't expose this on Clubhouse. I thought it was Elphaba with an S this entire time.
Why?
I have no idea. I know nothing about this show, and I only hear things about it tangentially.
Oh,
so,
my God.
So, dear everyone out there, it's Elphaba, E-L-P-H. Not Elphaba, E-L-S. Maybe like Frozen got into my head. Wasn't one of the characters there?
Elsie?
Like Elsa or something like that.
Right, or Elsa, yeah. Oh, dear.
So that's where I'd like to start. Just get that off my chest.
I actually got to see Wicked, like, as a musical is not usually my jam. It's like not the thing that I'm really excited about. But a friend came in town way back when and got tickets and invited me to go. I don't think I would have gone otherwise. So I actually got to see the original cast, which was pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. Wait, so why wouldn't you have gone? And I'll preface this and maybe call you out, or I'll put you in a box and then you can fight your way out of it. So across the conversation, we were talking about how, you know, the source material of Wicked, the Wizard of Oz, is super accessible. And one of the beautiful things about the play Wicked is that fancy theater people go see it. Regular old people like me might, in theory, go see it one day. but that it doesn't sort of box anyone out. But maybe right now, Jess is about to tell us that she's a theater snob and that Wicked is not for the people with the good taste in theater.
I'm going to give you a mixed bag of answers. One, I'm 100% a theater snob, period, the end. I have I don't know. I just have very strong opinions and tastes. I would say they're well earned and well-developed tastes that are very singular to me, right? I've seen arguably more theater than most people my age in my entire life, right? And so it's not like I have baseless opinions about it, but it's certainly just to my taste personally, right? And I tend to be more excited about things that break form and music. I don't know, just not like Wicked type musicals. But to continue, yeah, not fighting out in my box. I'm like a cat in a box. I'm like, this box is awesome. This box is the best.
I'm like a cat in a box. If we had like a merch department, that would be on a t-shirt.
No, I wouldn't have ever gone to see Wicked, I don't think, had I not gotten that ticket. But what I was going to say is that I really enjoyed it. Funny enough, I some of the casting was not my favorite in the entire world. Ooh, don't tell.
Ooh, do tell. That's what we're here to talk
about.
But
no, I really, of the original cast, but I really enjoyed the show, actually. I don't remember a ton about it now because that was a long time ago. But I remember really enjoying the choreography a lot. And the ensemble was just phenomenal. And I really liked the music. So I really liked it.
You heard it here first, folks.
You fuckface trying to trap me into a box.
A glaring recommendation. Meowing on a mic is super weird. But Lucy, I look forward to when you're in New York and we go see The Wickeds with Elphaba, my new favorite character.
Well, you know, you have to fill me in a little bit on this part of the conversation because I was at home this morning waiting for the internet to be fixed. So I missed a little bit of this.
Yeah.
Because my take, I just heard a little bit of Jermaine saying how excited he was. I'm pretty fucking, like, this is the version of Wicked I really want. You know what I mean? Like,
would you like an invite to when Lucy and I go see it? Oh, just kidding. This is going to be the movie.
But it won't be them. Yeah, we'll have to go see the movie. But
let's this do that
is,
too.
I don't see musical movies very often. This casting, I will be fucking going to see this movie.
Wow, even Broadway snobs are going to go see this movie.
You are so rude.
I'm killing it today. Yeah, so what you said before got me thinking about it, sort of the casting choices. And I was trying to get you to elucidate that a bit. But that's actually, I was going to use the transition for what Jermaine educated me on across this, because I knew nothing about Wicked, it turns
Clearly.
Out, prior to this Clubhouse conversation. Yeah. So there's a recommendation for anyone who wants to learn about musical theater that knows nothing about anything. Jermaine is an amazing, like, teacher, recapper, storyteller. He's just so good.
He is, yeah.
So props to Jermaine Blackwell.
And by the way, quick pause. I don't know if you saw, Clubhouse just released a new feature that we don't have quite yet, I don't think, because they're rolling it out, but it's replays. So like soon you'd be able to go back and listen to Jermaine talk about his opinions about the casting of Wicked.
Damn, I feel like we like missed out this week by not having that.
I know.
He was really good this week, and I'll do a really poor job summarizing right now. But one of the things I learned about the show is that the role of Elphaba is a woman of color, but in this instance, just literally green. But it's so much about the fact that it's someone trying to fit into a society that doesn't make space or have place for them. Is a potentially poor summarization of a really eloquent thing that Jermaine said. And I just had no idea that was even part of the subject matter, the context of the musical, because I, again, had no idea what it was about.
Yeah, and so and being marginalized and being an outsider and... Yeah, totally. Have you read the book?
Nope.
Oh my gosh. Literally, the book's pretty good.
It sounds great. I'm like actually really excited to go see and to learn more of this story. And it put into context for me now understanding a little bit more about the play itself, why it's so important that this casting is happening for the movie.
Yeah, it's huge. Did you guys talk about like one Black Elphaba? One?
Yes.
One. It basically the hardest singing role in the musical theater canon for a belter. There, how one, like unconscious bias. There's nothing there but unconscious bias. There is no possible excuse to explain that away. In a, how many, we're almost, I don't know, is it 18 years now, 15 years this musical has been running?
Yeah, how many like shows, versions of this are out there with women playing this role? Like, is this like hundreds?
Yes.
Hundreds of castings happening in a single?
Well, because they, I mean, I don't know. Like, let's assume they have somewhere between 5 and 10 companies that are on like pink contracts or the equivalent of, which means multiple national tours, international tours, West End sit down, you know, like blah, blah, blah across all of these years. Plus like every, I don't know. Is it licensed? Can you license Wicked yet? I actually don't know the answer to that. So it might not be hundreds, but
okay.
Too many across too many years for there to have been one freaking African-American Elphaba.
It's pretty wild.
It's fucked up.
Yeah. I don't remember anything else Jermaine said now. I'm blanking on it all. We just need to get him on the podcast.
That's true. He did say, I walked in when he was saying, and hopefully I will get to sing with her someday or maybe stand behind her and step touch.
That is right when you came in.
Yeah, I felt that. I was like, me too. She's amazing.
Yeah. So with this conversation, you know, we talked a bit as well about like the other roles that were in there. The fact that Ariana Grande is going to be part of the movie, which I'm a, you know, an Ariana Grande fan. Love all of her music. You know, the one song that I know.
I'm excited about her, too. I mean, don't get me wrong. Kitchen, love her. Amazing. Incredible performer, truly. But like, again, this is part of why I don't think I would have ever seen it. Like the unimaginative casting of a white woman with dark hair as Elphaba and a little tiny blonde woman as Glinda. Like, I'm just like not into that. It's just like not my bag. And now we've had blonde Glinda. I mean, they've done a little better with Glindas across the year. Like I am here for Ariana Grande as a Glinda. That Glinda's going to be spicy and quirky and gonna sing her face off. I'm so excited.
Heck yeah. And where I wanted to get us to as well was the petition against James Corden. Yeah,
poor James Corden.
I said this in Clubhouse that I am like on that side of the fence of like, yeah, no, he shouldn't be in this. And I have no idea why. I have no real opinions about James Corden.
Oh my God, he was a Broadway actor before like he was any...
Yeah, my only tether to James Corden is that he was in an arc on Doctor Who a few years back, the Matt Smith seasons. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's all I know of James Corden, really. But I hate him, it seems. I have the feeling connected. I have no idea.
How did he end up as such a divisive character? I don't understand. He's like just generally nice and charming and like pretty funny.
I've got literally nothing to draw from. It is genuine confusion. Like why that part of the internet has seeped into my opinions of this person that I just like, I have nothing to, like no basis from which to judge. I have not consumed anything except this Doctor Who stuff back in like 2015.
Do you think he starts these? Himself. He's starts the petition to get James Corden off of Wicked.
I feel like that would like make me like him. I can't really say more because I don't have, I have established that I don't have a basis from which to judge. But yeah, like him more that he started a petition against himself.
Yeah, he was in the, what was it? The History Boys? What the fuck was that play called? Yeah, he's like a proper theater actor. Whatever. I didn't see him in Cats, though. And maybe he really screwed the pooch in Cats, if you know what I'm saying.
He's got the best wink from across the office. So bad. So good. So I know amongst the younger generations, let's just put this on Gen Z for a second.
The Utes.
That they find people like Lin-Manuel Miranda to be kind of cringy. And chuggy, if you will.
Chuggy?
Chuggy.
I don't know that one.
So it was a term that was going around quite a bit, maybe like 6 months ago, but was sort of like coined and popularized a long time ago. That's just when it sort of hit my spheres. And it's used mostly as a pejorative from Gen Z and younger generations and sort of poised as this sort of battle between generations of Gen Z kind of making fun of millennials for all of these things, these trends, these lifestyle trends that are associated with millennials and millennial culture that are kind of deemed to be like not cool anymore or trying too hard or were formerly trendy. And so there's like TikToks and blogs and all these things about these actions that are kind of like coded as millennial that are like just not cool.
Can you use that like, in a sentence, please?
Ugg boots are chuggy. Like it's meant to give you a visceral feeling.
Oh.
It's like a thing or an action that is typified by being part of like a millennial generation. Usually like the 2010s is I think when it's referencing. And it's just like, oh yeah, like that's like, so chuggy. Like, yeah, like t-shirts that say like, don't talk to me before I've had my morning coffee or whatever like that. Like it's one part kitsch, one part just trying too hard chuggy.
Well, it's like the cycle, generational cycle, isn't it? That's such a great reminder that it for us too, the things that we get pissed about in here, and you lose all the generational context between generations, right? So for someone my age, Lynn is the example of someone who fucking pounded the pavement for decades. I remember that Hamilton mixtape going around and no one knew we were like, who the fuck is this guy?
Mm-hmm. And the origins of Freestyle Love Supreme.
Right, yeah. Exactly. And, you know, that's for my generation, but now we're too far removed from that. And he's been in the limelight for too long. And to be fair, with a bunch of dudes and like all the things that are like kind of the worst, you know what I mean? Even though he, you know, has worked really hard to be where he's at. So it's interesting. It's good to remember the generation. Like soon, Lucy, you too will have a generational cycle where people younger than you are going to call you dumb and old. And why do you like that?
Yeah. Lean in.
Lean in.
I can't wait to be dumb and old. Look forward to it.
Oh, man, we've gone far afield today.
Yeah. Where are we?
I don't know.
I took us here. I'm sorry.
You did. You were in charge of that part. Okay, well, then let's go to the second half of the conversation when I was actually there.
Let's do it. Oh, I wanted to talk about Hollywood and intellectual property, but I don't really care. All right. I think we've talked in the past for longtime listeners of the podcast about Hollywood's, it's not an intellectual property problem, but it's just like Hollywood's a machine. It cranks out movies, makes money. And they need a bank of content from which to pull to create these. And they often will pull from places with existing fandom to have a built-in audience for their mega massive blockbuster hits. And we talked about like how anime, I think anime is going to be a trove of future Hollywood content. But I hadn't thought about the fact that Broadway and musical theater is a large trove of content to be transformed into Hollywood blockbuster movies, as is evidenced by Hamilton and now Wicked and In the Heights and all these other things. And Jermaine said very smart things about the sort of revolving door between Hollywood and Broadway and how, you know, Broadway used to be the sort of epicenter of culture that then Hollywood would take from. And now it's sort of influencing back the other direction. And now it's kind of just ebbing back and forth. I think there's, I'm not really sure about the specific numbers, but I think Hollywood is just like a bigger entity in terms of money-making capabilities.
Sure.
So it feels like it is grabbing, stealing from wherever it can find to create its content. And I was like, oh, like Broadway has done an excellent job of baking in and building these audiences, and Hollywood can take them and grow them even further, give people different ways to engage with the content. Go see Wicked again. Because Ari's in it. I saw it. You got psyched about it.
I am so psyched.
Use case.
I know. Isn't that funny? Back to your, like what you just said about budgets and revenues. Like so, what you just said makes the, well, now I'm actually kind of connecting this to the next topic, which is the people who say there's no like market in theater on screens. Well, I think Hollywood would beg to differ. If there's enough money and revenue potential in these musicals, the filmed ones, right, for that are released, wide release, and these TV live ones like the Annie Live that's coming up, like for better or for worse, they're not, the live ones aren't my favorite thing in the world, but there's clearly enough people watching for advertisers to feel like it's valuable to throw their advertisements on it. Mm-hmm. So I might suggest to the people we haven't put on blast yet because we haven't talked about this part of the Clubhouse conversation, but I might suggest when we're done with it that you might want to look at how you're capturing that theater and what you're offering to your audiences as a potential source of the problem, not just theater doesn't belong on screens.
Great segue.
Thank you.
Do you want to give us a quick summary of that American Theater article?
Well, it's not, we didn't really talk about the whole article, but there was a survey of 547 people, which first of all, I thought that was really interesting that you said, you were like, check the premise. Why are we doing statistics around 547 people surveyed, of whom only 64 responded? So now, so like I'm prefacing this, friends that are listening, with like, there's this American Theater article being passed around this week as like the word on virtual theater, and the word on virtual theater, because of course it's an American Theater article, which is a very important publication in our industry, is that of the 64 people who did respond to this, the majority found that they lost money on virtual theater and that their audiences didn't find it satisfying. So like to the point you made in Clubhouse, I don't even know why we're talking about this. And I can't believe, like, it's really like indicative of what's scary about, well, scary to those of us who are very invested in, I guess, the accessibility of theater. It's scary about like bad reporting. You know what I mean? Because it's like, it's not, it's useless. That is actually useless. 64 people out of the entire American theater, most of whom made some kind of digital theater last year or virtual theater. Like the results of that just don't, they're not, they don't matter, right? But anyway, no.
let's do the quick meta analysis then. Let's not give it more oxygen. Let's tear it the fuck down. But I just want to read like the what is this, the byline on it, or is this the headline? Oh, this is the headline. The jury is in on virtual theater. So it positions itself as like an authority on this topic. Mm-hmm. But then it gives you hold on, let's do the math.
Funny, Joe. You did. That was great.
I told you I would do comedy today. 64 out of 547 members of TCG is only 11.7% of them. So they're saying definitively that the jury is in based on, 11% of people responding to their survey. And we made the sort of the Yelp comparison that who the hell leaves Yelp reviews? It's like people who are real pissed off and they're motivated to leave it, or people who are really, really, really excited, or maybe just weird and they like leaving Yelp reviews. But there's like a bias towards either negative or really, really positive, but mostly towards the negative. So it's not that surprising to me that a lot of the people who chose to respond did so maybe with an axe to grind. Mm-hmm. And I do think it's a bit irresponsible of American Theater and this author whose name I'm not going to say on our podcast. Not gonna dox.
She who shall remain nameless.
You can go find it yourself. It's a public byline. is doing a disservice, is actively putting misinformation out there. You know, this isn't necessarily a representation of what's actually going on. And now a whole bunch of people are going to read that byline on Facebook, on Twitter, not read the article, and then just like have their opinion made for them.
Right. Because the jury's in. Oh. Ooh, that's frustrating.
The jury is not in.
Says we. Well,
that's the title of the episode.
I will say, what I thought was fun about this was, so Lucy, you picked this article as part of the lineup this week on your own. And on my way into the office today, I was just checking in on Twitter and found a really big thread about this with like kind of the group of folks that I follow that are all sort of invested across the different facets of virtual or digital theater making. And what I thought was really neat about it, and that I would love to hear your thoughts about, was so last month in the Show Report, which is this cool newsletter that we put out once a month, just like looking at the future of live theater and digital performance and audiences and all of that good stuff. Last month, or 2 months ago, I guess, you and I, we looked at the product adoption curve for technology products.
Yes, we did.
Yeah, we did. Which, like, hi, BFA and tap dancing over here was like, what is this? This is so cool. And what we realized as we were looking at that to write this newsletter article was that we were basically trying to convince people, I mean, it's true, right, that we've got, like, we are the place early adopters come to, right? We are the company that they come to make digital live experiences. And what we found when we looked at the product adoption curve is that really all those early adopters who were our customers last year probably wouldn't have been an early adopter if COVID hadn't happened. They were really the early majority, maybe the late majority. So they're basically like two or three segments of customers in to adopt, but COVID kind of forced them to do it earlier, to be braver, right? To be more, take more risk in their minds with this.
To jump the chasm.
Yes, to jump the chasm.
Yeah, and as quick backstory for those who don't know it, the product adoption curve breaks potential customers or consumers into these big bucketed categories based on their behaviors. And there's a bunch of people who are just going to try things just to try things. They're excited, they're adventurous, they're going to mess around and sort of work through the bugs, work through the kinks. And then there's a huge gap between those people and the next groups of people who are like not as adventurous, not as risk-taking, not going to jump that chasm between those two groups and actually experiment or try something new before it is polished, before it is packaged to them in a way that they understand, before the results are proven. And so jumping that chasm from those people who will give you the benefit of the doubt, that will mess around with your buggy product, to the people who are going to not is really hard. And it's a place that a lot of companies struggle. And as Jess was just saying, and now I'm just reiterating what she said, COVID forced a lot of those people to leap that chasm, become those earlier adopters, because there was nothing else that they could do.
Yeah,
like they had to. They were forced by an external force to actually just try things and experiment things. And we think some of those people are going to stay with us and continue to experiment and to have feel like the use case has been proven for live digital and live digital performance and the extension of in-person performance to a digital audience. But some people are going to retreat back to their comfy, safe zone. The early majority is the technical term for this cohort. And they're going to go back and be like, yeah, we tried that. We're scared of it.
Fully scared of it. So what I like to go back to what I thought was really fun about the Twitter thread and this today was that learned about this concept via Joe, right? And applied it to our customers and our collaborators for an article a couple months ago. But then today when I was reading through that Twitter thread, there was not a small amount of people who, of course, were just like, they're haters. Virtual theater's awesome. This is just, they're mean. You know what I mean?
Sounds like a productive Twitter conversation.
Yeah, exactly. And so my head immediately went to this and I thought, oh, this is an exciting chance for me to think more critically about what is the actual problem with this article. And I immediately.
Just my heart.
Yeah, I was like trying to do my best Joe White impression. And I was like, okay, I think the issue with this in a more specific nature is that they surveyed people who are not early adopters, right? Like that's what we learned when we looked at it with our customers. These are early majority or late majority people who got just forced into doing this. And in this particular application, it means those are people who have financial and geographic access to in-person and had it before. And as we know and talk about a lot here, that's not the main customer for virtual theater, right? Like, they'll be at best late majority onto this, probably laggards, because they have full access to the in-person thing. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And then to your point, how you were saying, until a product is really shiny, mm-hmm. like until digital theater is really worked out and we know how to make really exciting shit.
Until Lin-Manuel Miranda's talking about it, yeah. My mom is not going to care.
Exactly. The people that were surveyed are not the real actual customer or like the harbinger of the opportunity that exists. And so, you know, what I was saying when I was in this Twitter thread, and we talked about it a little bit on Clubhouse today, is that like, I feel like this was just a little disingenuous and a little lazy, because it didn't really survey the people or the behaviors that are going to tell us something valuable about the growth and the genesis and the growth of this as we start to reset. And it's a real viable branch of theater.
Yeah. I want to read that article that you just described, where it's like breaking this down into those buckets and talking about, hi, we heard from 64 people and we think they're not ready.
Yeah. But
that doesn't mean that this isn't a viable opportunity. Yeah.
Well, I said on Twitter, I hope we do better moving forward in the future, you know, because I think that article is apples and oranges. It's just not helpful.
Agreed.
But the good news is you can't, and our one stupid article is not going to stop all these wildly creative people who are trying to push this industry forward and are going to succeed, right? So that's pretty cool. I think that's great.
Yeah, we're certainly not stopping.
No.
So just wait for us to be profiled in American theater for the other perspective on this.
Yeah. Hey, also, as a side note, just so y'all know, when we did that show report about product development or product adoption and the chasm, as Joe was talking about, because I'm just a child. I photoshopped a picture of Donnie Wahlberg jumping in Blue Bloods and then put him jumping over the chasm and made a comparison to a New Kids on the Block concert, because I'm a child again.
Yep, I thought it was funny. I missed that reference so hard that Jess called me out on it. She was like, why didn't you say anything about that part?
It was so good.
I just don't get it.
God damn
it. I still don't really get it. I tried.
It's Donnie Wahlberg.
Whoosh, right over the head. Well, in the parlance of 538, one of my favorite podcasts, 538 Politics Podcast, this is a bad use of polling.
Oh, yeah. Stamp. I wish we had like a little graphic that was like, stamp. Yeah. Tech theater. Bad.
That was really good.
Man.
Actually, I encourage everyone on here to not read the American Theater article. Didn't see that one coming,
Jess. We have to
Jess.
Know what we're fighting. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, if you actually, you know, now that you have the context, you have our perspective, go take a read of it yourself.
Oh, yeah. Are we right? Are we wrong? Are we children? All of the above?
Let us know what you think. Keep this conversation going. Jump into that thread on Twitter that Jess was talking about. At the very least, tweet at us at BWI Unlocked and use the hashtag TechTheaterCH.
And then, of course, come be a part of our next conversation Tuesday at 12:55 Eastern on Clubhouse. It's the Tech Theater Room. We do the news of the week in technology and theater, and we're excited for you to join us. Raise your hand, jump in, and share your thoughts.
And if you enjoyed today's episode, we'd love it if you could rate us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts and leave a review. Let them know that we have the best takes.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5 stars. We get 5 stars today. 5 stars. You are not bad.
That was my favorite one so far.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
And as you know, every single topic we talk about has been inspired by the articles we share every week in our company Slack channel and by all those smart thoughts of the people who join us on our stage in Clubhouse. So please join us, Twitter, Clubhouse, wherever you want. And we'll see you next week.
Bye, everyone.
Hey, bye.